Last Sunday, I had an opportunity to speak for just a few moments to the lady who visited with us, and she wants to begin worshiping with us, and we hope that that will work out. But found out we had a number of things in common. She said she used to live in Jacksonville. I said, well, that's where I was born and raised. She said, I moved away in 1984. I said, well, so did I. And, of course, I spoke last Sunday about the fact that we had a dear friend in common, but the brother used to preach for the West Gannett congregation in Jacksonville. But every once in a while, something like that will happen that'll cause me to reflect over the past 39 years, since 1984, and I have gained a much greater appreciation for what the Apostle Paul wrote in Romans 8 and verse 28. He said, and we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose. That's a great blessing, and it's in store for those who love God, those who are among the called according to God's purpose. That's a very encouraging principle. It helps us when times are difficult, knowing that things will work together for good, but we always have to keep that in mind. It will help us to continue going forward. That particular principle is illustrated many times in the Bible, and at the present time we're studying from the book of Genesis to see how all things work together for good in the life of Joseph. Joseph receives, or deserves, I should say, a lot of credit in many areas. He was a willing servant in the service of God. And it's hard for me to imagine this sometimes or to keep it in mind, but the fate of the entire nation of Israel was resting upon the shoulders of Joseph. That's a big burden for a young man to carry. I don't think he realized it at the time, but because he was faithful to God, an entire nation of people was blessed abundantly. Joseph deserves a lot of credit for his faith. He deserves a lot of credit for his willingness to always serve God. But I believe he also deserves a lot of credit for not growing cynical and antagonistic toward his brothers because of the way that they treated him. I was taught a number of years ago when I was in school that trials can either make us bitter or they can make us better, depending on how we face them. And I believe if we'll imitate Joseph, follow his example, we can see how trials can make us better and not bitter. So there are a number of valuable lessons to learn from Joseph and the example that he set. Right now we're concentrating on how all things work together for good in his life. This evening, we want to concentrate for a little while on the information that's given in Genesis chapter 45. And one of the main points made in this chapter is that Joseph made himself known to his brothers, and in doing so, he made provisions for his family to move from Canaan to the land of Egypt. And that's basically what chapter 45 is about. But there are a few things we need to keep in mind that took place before the events recorded in chapter 45. Remember that Joseph's brothers had gone to Egypt, and they bought grain from him on two occasions. Remember, there was a great famine. Egypt was not the only land affected by the famine. The land of Canaan was affected as well. Well, that's where Jacob and his family lived. And Joseph's brothers had gone to Egypt to purchase grain because under the leadership of Joseph, the Egyptians stored up a tremendous amount of grain for the years of famine. Now, when Joseph's brothers appeared before him, he recognized them, but they did not recognize him. A number of years had passed, and apparently, as Joseph matured, his appearance apparently changed somewhat, and he spoke to them through an interpreter. But we need to keep in mind that Joseph's brothers did not recognize him. Now, they still had a guilty conscience because of what they had done to him years earlier. But when Joseph's brothers were going home after they bought grain the second time, Joseph's cup was found in the grain sack belonging to Benjamin. Now, it had been planted there. And Joseph's brothers were on their way home. No doubt they thought that everything was finally going well with them. They were overtaken, and the search was made for Joseph's cup, and it was found in that grain sack belonging to Benjamin. Well, the brothers had to return and appear before Joseph. And when they did, Joseph said that Benjamin would be his servant, but the other brothers were free to go back to Canaan. They were free to leave Egypt and go back to their home. It was then that Judah made a great appeal with a lot of passion. And his appeal was on behalf of Jacob and Benjamin. Judah rehearsed to Joseph the whole story. And he indicated that Jacob's life was pretty much wrapped up in the life of Benjamin. He was his youngest son. And Judah, remember, had said that he would serve as the guarantee for Benjamin. And when Judah was talking to Joseph, he asked that he stay a servant in Joseph's house in the place of Benjamin. But Judah said that if he went back home without Benjamin, Jacob would surely die. Well, he made the request that Joseph keep him, that is, Judah did. He made the request that Joseph keep him as a servant in the place of Benjamin. And we will see that this appeal that Judah made affected Joseph. I've tried to picture this scene many times. I've read it, I don't know how many times over the years. I've studied it. And I've just tried to picture being present when all of this unfolded and took place. It had to be a very emotional time. Well, let's notice in verses 1 through 4 of chapter 45 that Joseph finally made himself known to his brothers. Verse 1. Then Joseph could not refrain himself before all them that stood by him, and he cried, "Cause every man to go out from me." And there stood no man with him while Joseph made himself known unto his brethren. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh heard. And Joseph said unto his brethren, "I am Joseph. Doth my father yet live?" And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. And Joseph said unto his brethren, "Come near to me, I pray you." And they came near. And he said, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt." That had to be very emotional. And we need to keep in mind that Joseph's emotions had already affected him to some extent. In chapter 42 and verse 24, he had to weep when he dealt with his 10 brothers. And then in chapter 43 and verse 30, when he spoke to Benjamin, remember he was brought back the second time they came to purchase some grain. He wept greatly when he spoke to Benjamin. Well, on those occasions, Joseph had to leave. And after he would have a cry, he would come back and deal with his brothers. Well, by this time, Joseph could no longer hide his emotions. Moses tells us that he wept aloud. This time, he didn't go to another place where he could weep privately. He wept aloud right there in front of his brothers. But you know, when Joseph was talking to his brothers and identifying himself, we can only imagine what was going through their minds. Now, they've already made several statements indicating that they had guilty consciences for the way that they had treated Joseph. Can you imagine what was going through their minds now? He is alive. I've wondered if they thought, can you believe this? Or, I can't believe this is happening. I've made that statement many times, have you? Well, Joseph tried to put their minds at ease. Now remember, he's the number two leader in the whole land of Egypt. He has a lot of authority. He's only under the leadership of Pharaoh. No one else is over Joseph. He's the number two leader in the whole land of Egypt. But Joseph tried to put the minds of his brothers at ease. Well, let's continue at verse 5, because Joseph indicated that God had been in control through everything that took place. These are some marvelous statements here. That's why I keep trying to go back and spend just a moment or two in review, because this is a running narrative, and the information revealed in each chapter is based on what's already been presented. Well, we need to keep in mind all of this information leading up to what's taking place in this chapter. Verse 5. Now this is Joseph speaking to his brothers. Now therefore be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that you sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in the which there shall neither be earing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. And he hath made me a father to Pharaoh, and the Lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Remember, there would be 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. The 7 years of plenty have come to an end, and now the famine is taking place. 2 years have passed. That means that there were 5 years of famine remaining. And as Joseph was talking to his brothers, he realized that God had placed him in the position that he had so that he could preserve his family in Egypt. I have mentioned it several times, but remember, years earlier, God had said to Abraham that his descendants would spend 400 years in a foreign land where they would be servants. And when the time was right, they would go to the promised land. All of that's coming to pass. Well, through the providence of God, Joseph had become the number two ruler in the entire land of Egypt. So Joseph at this point is not concerned about getting even with his brothers. He has reflected on everything and he realizes that God has been in control of everything that took place. I believe Joseph deserves a lot of credit for having that approach. That takes a special person to deal with a situation like he did. Well, Joseph went on to give some instructions to his brothers to bring Jacob, their families, and all of their animals down to Egypt. Verse 9. Haste ye, and go up to my father, and say unto him, Thus saith thy son Joseph, God hath made me lord of all Egypt. Come down unto me, tarry not. Thou shalt dwell in the land of Goshen, And thou shalt be near unto me, thou and thy children and thy children's children and thy flocks and thy herds and all that thou hast. And there will I nourish thee, for yet there are 5 years of famine, lest thou and thy household and all that thou hast come to poverty. And behold, your eyes see, and the eyes of my brother Benjamin, that it is my mouth that speaketh unto you. And ye shall tell my father of all my glory in Egypt, and of all that ye have seen, and ye shall haste and bring down my father hither. Remember that there were 5 years of famine left, and that indicates that there would be no grain in Canaan. Now, 5 years to do without grain is a long time. Not only would the people be affected, but what about all the animals that depended upon the grain for food? Well, they would suffer as well. So there were 5 years of famine remaining, but Joseph has instructed his brothers to go home, bring Jacob back, bring your families, and bring all of your animals. He said, you come all of you to Egypt and I'll take care of you. I've often wondered what was going through the minds of those brothers. Well, they received a lot better than they deserved. Let's look at verses 14 and 15, because in these verses, Joseph showed how he felt toward his brothers. And he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept upon his neck. Now remember, they had the same mother. Their mother was Rachel. And Rachel was the wife that Jacob loved the most dearly. By this time, she has passed away because she died when Benjamin was born. So Joseph began with his brother Benjamin. Moreover, he kissed all his brethren and wept upon them. And after that, his brethren talked with him. Once again, that has had to be a very emotional scene. Trying to picture what that was like. Poor brothers have a lot going through their minds. They've got a lot to deal with. But Joseph has given God credit for taking care of everything. But I want you to notice the change that's taking place. Back in verse 3, when Joseph first identified himself to his brothers, they could not answer him. Imagine they were just dumbstruck. What they could they possibly say? But now, at the end of verse 15, after he's talked with them, and after he's told them to go and bring Jacob and all their families down, and he would take care of them, they talk with him. So you can see the difference that's taking place. Earlier, Joseph's brothers could not answer him. Now they're talking with him. Pharaoh heard what was going on. Remember, everybody could hear Joseph weeping, including Pharaoh. Let's notice what he did. Pharaoh gave some instructions to Joseph to bring his family down to Egypt. Verse 16. And the fame thereof was heard in Pharaoh's house, saying, Joseph's brethren are come. And it pleased Pharaoh well and his servants. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, Say unto thy brethren, this do ye, lade your beast, and go, get you unto the land of Canaan, and take your father and your households, and come unto me, and I will give you the good of the land of Egypt, and ye shall eat the fat of the land. Now thou art commanded, this do ye, take you wagons out of the land of Egypt for your little ones and for your wives, and bring your father and come. Also regard not your stuff, for the good of all the land of Egypt is yours. So Pharaoh instructed Joseph, send his brothers back to bring Jacob, all their families down, and he'd give them a good place to live, the land of Goshen. He sent wagons so that they could bring their belongings with them, and he said, you could just leave all that stuff behind. He said, you'll have the best that the land has to offer. Well, that's mighty generous of Pharaoh, isn't it? He doesn't know these people, but he knows Joseph. and he's treating Joseph's family very well. Well, Joseph sent his brothers back to Canaan like Pharaoh told him to do, and he sent some provisions with them. Verse 21. And the children of Israel did so, and Joseph gave them wagons according to the commandment of Pharaoh, and gave them provision for the way. To all of them he gave each man changes of raiment. But to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of raiment. And to his father he sent after this manner, 10 asses laden with the good things of Egypt, and 10 she asses laden with corn and bread and meat for his father by the way. So he sent his brethren away, and they departed. And he said unto them, see that you fall not out by the way. Now keep in mind that Jacob is way up in years. And what did Joseph ask? Is your father still alive? Jacob's an old man. And Joseph wanted his brothers to take care of this matter quickly. You go home, back to Canaan, you get Jacob, bring all your families down to Egypt. I think it's interesting that Joseph sent these wagons so that they'd be able to transport everything and everybody down to Egypt. Verse 25. Jacob is told by his sons about everything that's taking place. And they went up out of Egypt and came into the land of Canaan unto Jacob their father and told him, saying, Joseph is yet alive, and he is governor over all the land of Egypt. And Jacob's heart fainted, for he believed them not. I've often wondered what these brothers had to talk about when they were going from Egypt back to Canaan to appear before their father. They're going to have to tell him about everything that had taken place. I don't think they were looking forward to that. It had to be done. But it would be finally brought out that they had deceived him. Do you remember how Jacob felt when he was given the coat with the blood on it that belonged to Joseph? He said, surely a wild animal has killed him. And remember, it was Jacob who sent Joseph to check on the welfare of his brothers. That man had been carrying a load for a long, long time, having to deal with all that. And now his sons appear before him, and they tell him that Joseph is alive. Well, you can just imagine how Jacob's heart fainted. He's an old man at this time. He did not believe them. And they told him all the words of Joseph, which he had said unto them. Notice this. And when he saw the wagons which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob their father revived. And Israel said, it is enough. Joseph, my son, is yet alive. I will go and see him before I die. Well, it took some convincing for Jacob to finally admit that what his boys were telling him was the truth. He saw the wagons. There was evidence presented that Joseph was down in Egypt and that he wanted his father to come and live with him. I think it's interesting that when Jacob saw the wagons, that had an effect on him. The spirit of Jacob revived. Over the years, I've preached a number of sermons on revival, and this is one illustration that I like to use to help us understand what revival is. There are a number of times in the Bible when great Bible characters were revived. This is one of them. It was some good news that caused Jacob's spirit to be revived. Remember when he thought that Joseph had been killed by a wild animal? All of his children had tried to comfort him, but he refused. He said, I will go to my grave sorrowing and mourning over Joseph. And now his spirit is revived. Well, as we study chapter 45, we see that the stage is being set for Jacob and Joseph to be reunited. That was another very emotional scene. But through it all, we see all things working together for good on behalf of God's chosen people. But we have to appreciate Jacob's determination. He said, "I will go and see him before I die." He was determined to go down to Egypt and to see his son Joseph. That reminds me of something that happened in my family a number of years ago. My parents were going to celebrate their 50th anniversary. And my daddy was really looking forward to that. We were living in South Texas at the time, and the preacher in Jacksonville, where they attended, asked my daddy, he said, "Albert, what do you want for your anniversary?" Well, one thing that he wanted was for me to come home and preach that Sunday. Well, frankly, I didn't really want to, because making that long trip and all the preparations that we had to make, it was just very involved. But I thought, you know, I'm glad that I was asked to do that, because that was the last time he ever heard me preach. And so I'm glad that I was given that opportunity. But before the anniversary, he had 3 aneurysms in his abdomen. The doctor told us one was the size of a tangerine, one was the size of an orange, and the other was the size of a grapefruit. That was the way he described it. All 3 of them. Now, by that time, my dad was over 80 years old and very weak. But he was looking forward to that anniversary. And in my own mind, I'm convinced and will never be convinced otherwise, looking forward to that anniversary pulled him through that surgery. Because he had had bypass surgery a few years earlier, and the doctor told us, he said, "You remember how serious that surgery was?" I said, "Yes, I remember." He said, "This was far worse." Well, not only did he get through the surgery, but he had his 50th anniversary. He only lived a couple of months after that. That was as far as he wanted to go. I think about that when I hear Jacob saying, "I am going to Egypt to see my son." He was not going to be led astray. He was not going to be deterred from that. And he made it. As a matter of fact, he lived for quite a while after he got to Egypt. But we'll talk about that as we study the next chapters. But determination is a powerful factor. This was not a matter that was just indifferent to Jacob. He was determined to go to Egypt to see his son. And he made it. Well, I think being determined is a great factor.